Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. Thanks for joining me on a Friday evening. I have some research that I did today that I'd like to discuss tonight. I try to usually end the week on more of a positive note, but I'm going to be really honest with you and tell you that I couldn't find anything real positive to talk about tonight. It appears as though we are in the dumps in a lot of different arenas, a lot of sadness in the world, a lot of tragedy, a lot of stuff going on that doesn't have anything to do with people, but tragedies that are just earthquakes and things that are happening all over the world. Somebody sent me a report about how many earthquakes are happening every few hours all over the world. And it's almost like the earth is trying to get our attention and tell us if we want to keep living here, maybe we should start caring a little bit more about everything that we live with. Of course, that would start with each other. And I think that that's an easy place to start. Fighting the big battles like poverty and the fact that our earth isn't being taken care of the way we want it to be because of garbage and because of toxins and because of all the other things that are going on. Those are big, big battles. And they need to be fought. But before you can realistically fight those big battles, you have to be able to fight the little ones. And the little ones are in our own worlds, beside us, around us, every minute of every day. The people that you stand beside in a line in the grocery store, the people you eat dinner with, the people you sleep with, the people you call your friends, all of us. Before we can fight those really, really big battles, and they're out there waiting for us to do something about them, we've got to start smaller and work on getting ourselves a stronger team, more unity, more people sticking together. I was very impressed by the aftermath of the bombings in Boston because I saw people really sticking together and really doing what needed to be done. And I've seen that many times in my life, in my personal life. So I know what we're capable of doing. The problem is, unless there's immediate danger or unless there's we're waiting for the repercussions or the last shoe to drop, we're oblivious. Please, let's wake up and start caring more about what's going on around us. I wanted to give you all an update on the young man that I told you about yesterday, who was apparently had a fight with the teacher and used an obscenity. I have yet to see what that obscenity was. I don't know if it was horrible or just a moderate swear word. I don't know what it was. But according to the story, the way I've read at least 7 reports, and the story goes that the teacher was angry and told 6 other boys, older boys, to go find this young man and deal with him and bring him back to her for an apology. Now, I've heard the deal with him. I've heard talk to him. I've heard all different kinds of phrases as to what she told them to do. I did not read any reports that said, you know, go out there and pummel him and beat him with your belt buckle. But that's what happened. And when the boys were addressed by this, the only comment that I read in regard to their behavior was, it got out of hand. Well, the follow-up today is that the teacher was taken out of the classroom. She is under investigation by the local authorities. But the school doesn't really feel that she did anything. Apparently, they don't feel that way. They just put her in another part of the school where she's not around any kids, which is hard for me to understand. If somebody else out there knows where you can go in a school and not be around any kids, I'd like you to call me and tell me where that is. And the boys, the six boys that they show right on video, one boy even hitting him with their belt, they're back in school, but they're also under some scrutiny by the local law enforcement and are under investigation and will have to be, something will have to happen to them. There'll have to be repercussions to them, but they're not saying what they're going to be at this point in time. I do want you to know, if you didn't look at the video that is available on Google or any of your search engines, it shows the teacher walking away into the camera, throwing her hand up in the air like, whatever, and walking away, just so you all know that. The boy, the young boy in question, who I have seen on television, is kind of a slight young man, not very big, not very burly. And his mom, of course, is brokenhearted because it doesn't appear as though anybody really cares that this happened to her son. So we have that I'll keep you posted on. I don't know if anything else is going to happen. And even if it does happen, I don't know whether it will become newsworthy enough for me to know about it. But if it does, I will keep everybody posted. The other thing that I looked into today, because of stories like this and because of some other personal things that have come to me recently, is the suicides that take place amongst teens. And it's heartbreaking. It's really, really heartbreaking. And there's a lot of suicides. There's a lot of hurting themselves. There's a lot of things that happen to our young people today because it apparently, in a lot of cases, they think nobody cares. I see that Shelley has joined us. She wasn't sure how soon she'd be on tonight. I'm going to bring her in case she has any input for the rest of the news that I'm going to share. Just doing the show, babe.
Hey, Reen.
Hi, sweetie. How are you?
Doing pretty good.
That's good. You got here earlier than you thought you were going to.
Yeah. I got out like right at 7 on the button, so that worked out well for me.
Yeah, well, that's good. Well, I've shared everything about the young man who was attacked in the Port St. Lucie school, and I think I already filled you in on that this afternoon, didn't I?
The only thing I don't know about him is... Did he suffer any injuries that made him hospitalized, or I mean, it's serious enough just to be hurt, whether it's that type. But was he injured severely enough where he had to go to the hospital?
No, he wasn't. And when you watch the video, it's like they're like pummeling him, but it's like, you know, a kick here, a punch there, a belt buckle. But he was sitting down and against the wall and had his head covered. I did him on a newscast with his mom, and there's no permanent damage other than, of course, his self-esteem and his feelings, I'm sure, are hurt badly.
You don't have to suffer broken bones or wounds that, you know, break the skin in order for it to be traumatic. Just to have somebody lay their hands on you in a violent way, you can be slapped across the face once and have it be traumatic, depending on who's doing it to you and for what reason, you know. So, and here he's got six boys pummeling him, and like I said, regardless of whether it I just didn't know the severity of his injuries, but it certainly doesn't have to result in a hospital stay to be traumatic.
No. Well, and I don't know, because the way the video is shown, I can't tell whether he could see the teacher. I can't tell whether having the boys around him, he was in a seated position with his back up against the wall, the video that I saw, and the teacher comes out from another door and sees what's happening, puts her arm up in the air like a whatever kind of a gesture.
Wow.
And walks
Wow.
away. So the other thing that crossed my mind was another opportunity for it to be reinforced for him that grown-ups don't care. You know,
right.
So I think that's one of the worst things. Now, his mom seems to be very strong, very outspoken. She's very upset about all of this, but I've seen her twice now on newscasts, and that's what she's the most upset about, is the fact that the teacher apparently about what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So... But they are still, I'll just recap that so that you know about that. They will still be, the six boys are back in class, but they're under investigation from the local law enforcement, and so is the teacher. The school has allowed the boys to come back, and the school has taken the teacher out of the classroom, and I told the listeners tonight, the way it read was she's put someplace where she's not around kids, and I opened up the door and asked all of our listeners that if they knew someplace in a school where you're not going to be around kids, I'd like to hear about where that is.
Yeah, that's like absurd. Where she worked in the office, filing.
Well,
or something?
even in an office. I mean, kids come and go now. I mean, the last time I was in the middle school, gosh, there were kids helping in the office on their study hall time and in and out of every space, even the principal's office, not just for reprimanding or because they're in trouble. They come and go, and they have runners that deliver notes to the teachers and do all kinds of stuff. So I'd be interested in knowing where in a school she got to be where she's not going to come in contact with any children. So that whole statement
Wow.
was somewhat ludicrous to me.
It
so, but I promised everybody I would keep them posted about this. It may not be newsworthy anymore. You know how that goes.
Yeah.
Because luckily the young man is okay, and so I don't know how much, you know, how much attention they're going to get. But if they do, I will keep everybody posted. But because of all the things that we've talked about, and we have touched on this, and because of some things that have come to me personally here lately, I did quite a bit of research on suicide. And a few weeks ago, I talked about the 15-year-old girl who went to a private party and drank, and the boys took advantage of her and then took pictures of her and posted it. And when she saw the pictures that had been posted on this other young man's site, I'm not clear on whether it's Facebook or MySpace or what, you know, what kind of social network it was, but that's when she took her own life. And so as I read about that, I also realized that, of course, suicide amongst young people doesn't necessarily have to do with being abused or bullied. And one of our big problems out there today is the fact that depression and learning disabilities and a little bit of unstableness is really not worked with. As long as you can keep floating, nobody sends, you know, nobody puts out a life preserver to you.
Yeah.
So if you're the type of child that just keeps getting by on the skin of their teeth, even at home, because in a lot of cases at home, nobody wants to face the truth. Everybody, you know, spends time on that famous river in Egypt. So it's part of it is that. But I also read a lot of things about teen depression, anger issues, which has to do sometimes with maybe not really what you would call abuse, but the way a child feels that they are being treated. You know, being a parent, it doesn't make you good at it. It just means you are. You've given birth or you've taken responsibility of a child, but it doesn't mean that you have any parental skills. It doesn't mean, you know, it just doesn't mean any of those things. It's something that has to be worked on. And there's also a lot of chemical imbalance. Now, you and I are very familiar with this because of everything that we have learned in our recent employment about chemical imbalance and things like that. And when kids eat so much food that has MSG and all kinds of preservatives and everything in it. Now, you have some kids, don't get me wrong, audience, you have some kids that could eat poop with ketchup on it and never get sick and never have any side effects. It all depends on what kind of, you know, what kind of immune system they have and how they're built. Other kids are very sensitive. Other people are very sensitive. And often some of the depression, some of the inability to grasp what they're being taught has to do with a lot of the food that they're eating.
Of course.
And, of course, today we live in a fast food world. I was so disappointed because AJ, that I talk about all the time, one of his favorite foods in the world are those baby carrots. And we buy him bags of those baby carrots. And now I find that they're soaked in some kind of alcohol and I've read so many different things and I no longer know what is true.
They're soaked in bleach.
Yeah, that's what it was, bleach.
So they aren't adding to your health. You know, I don't even know if I don't even know if there's a brand out there that doesn't do that. But they're not as healthy as you think they are.
Yeah.
Well, just so you know, anybody who's got a Kangen machine, it's a machine that makes different grades of water. If you soak them in what's called 11 alkaline water, which is 11 point alkalinity. And you soak them, and after about 15 minutes, it does pull that out of it. So it's a good protocol to have. I mean, I don't know how many of your listeners may have it, but it's a fairly popular machine. So anybody that has that probably already knows that. But if you use high alkaline water, and you soak your fruits or vegetables, it pulls a lot of impurities out of them. So it makes them safer to eat.
Well, but the point is that, you know, a lot of the foods that are sold in the grocery store, even in the fresh produce market, are not always healthy. And again, I feel the need to keep saying this over and over again because I don't want people to, first of all, get crazy about this. But some people can eat anything. And they've just got everything that they need to fight those toxins with. But some people cannot. It's just like I could stand in a wheat field and think it's the most beautiful place I've ever been, smelling the sweet wheat, having the wind blow. Then I could take my daughter and put her out there. Within 10 minutes, both eyes are swollen shut. She can barely breathe. You know, there's nothing beautiful about it for her. So those are the kind of things that I'm talking about. But when I talk about depression in the kids, and imagine being 12 years old, and maybe your diet isn't the best, but maybe that's really not even the problem. Maybe you've just got some learning disabilities. And unless you're in a really, really fine school where there's extra help, where you can get tutored, where somebody can come in and spend extra time with you. Now, a lot of the schools are doing this. I don't want to take away the fact that I know of schools that are bringing in extra help, either in higher grades or whatever, to help tutor kids that look as though they're having some problems.
Mm-hmm.
But in the same token, it's all about how that child is to begin with, and depression and anger And all of those things can also come from your family, from your heredity.
Of course, right.
And your genes, you know, it's also about that. And unless those things get recognized and you know, paid attention to, then you have a kid that grows older and older, and the problems get bigger and bigger,
mm-hmm.
instead of getting better and better. Deal with them, they just get worse. So
right.
I think that's one of the other things that we need to start addressing. I'd like to see more. Maybe, do you remember when, I'm quite a bit older than you are, but I can remember doing some tests in like second grade that just kind of analyzed your learning abilities, and they were real simple. They were, you know, like who hangs out with who, you know, and you'd have a bird and a cat and a dog, right? Now, you very rarely see a bird hanging out with a cat, but you do see cats and dogs living in the same house together. Little tests like that to see, first of all, if you had any common sense and if you're paying any attention to what's going on around you. I think those kind of tests in the early years, instead of making sure that your kid knows, can read when he's five, I think those kind of tests would be more valuable to us so that we can help them with those beginning things that start getting so frustrating for them.
Right.
If a kid is frustrated, they quit doing anything. So then you get, you know, they're in kindergarten. That's been a struggle, but they make it through on the skin of their teeth. Then they're in first grade. And, of course, first grade's just enough harder so that the kid that was straggling in kindergarten is struggling in first grade. Usually by third grade, they hold them back because now they're really so far behind that they can't catch up. So instead of helping this child, they just keep letting them, you know, float and keep, you know, skimming through. And I think
right.
this is where a lot of our problems are coming from. This is where a lot of our, quote-unquote, bullies are being designed and formulated and made into an older child. A lot of our depressed and introverted children are becoming who they're going to be because of those other challenges. So maybe along with everything that Izzy is trying to teach us, which you and I are both so totally in agreement with, and about the golden rule, and about how we treat each other and how you actually speak back to someone who is obviously trying to, you know, get on your bad side. We agree with that. But one of the other things that we need to address is where our kids are mentally and socially. And start addressing some of those things before, you know, before some of the terrible things that we see happening every day happen. And some of them go through their whole life and don't become a jerk until they're 40.
Well, but usually people don't become a jerk when they're 40 unless there was something underlying or unless something happened to them. Usually when somebody acts like that and they're an adult, they might have acted that way a little bit at younger years, and maybe something happened to them that kind of pushed them over the edge, you know. Your personality is pretty much done by the time you're in your 20s. So if somebody's acting that way at 40, then there was some intervening incident in their life that either embittered them or changed them somehow. But I don't know that somebody would become that way, or maybe they're going through some sort of a midlife crisis. I've also seen people change dramatically when they hit 40 or 50 because they're not adjusting to their age. It surprises me sometimes that people put such an emphasis on a number. I'm 50. I'll be 55 this year, and I really don't feel any different than I did when I was in my 20s or 30s, except for the fact that I'm healthier physically because of my particular journey, which is, you know, what brought me to Hippocrates. I don't mind telling people I'm 55 because mentally and emotionally I'm very youthful. So it's just a number. It doesn't mean anything. But I know people younger than me that you know, darn near have a nervous breakdown when they hit 40. So, you know, so people are impacted by that, and maybe that's a shift in their personality that pushes them to not act properly, you know, because then they're not dealing with the with looking at that number for some reason. It has an impact on them.
Well, I agree with that. But don't you think that if we help them, if we paid closer attention and helped them when they were younger and they do go through something that is traumatic and alters who they are, they would handle it better had we addressed their shortcomings when they were young?
Of course.
That's the whole point. Yeah. So, like, if you're living with a child and you see, you know, pretending something isn't there doesn't make it go away.
Of course not.
And that's a very, very valuable lesson for all of us. If we can remember that just because we choose not to deal with something right away makes it not be true is not right.
Right.
So, you know, I think that that's a big issue as well. So in the
schools...
Well,
let me ask you something. Rini, let me ask you something, because you just said something about these tests. And you said you remembered them when you were a kid. I remember them also. Are you saying that you're not seeing that young kids go through that type of social testing or common sense testing now?
I don't think that they do to the degree that they did with us when we were young. They're too busy trying to make sure that they know how to read and write by the time they are in first grade.
You know, one of the magazines I remember, I think I've told you this before, but one of the things that launched my health problems was that I had a heart condition when I was 6 years old, and it was actually my memory of that, because at the time I didn't realize how sick I was. So when I had to go to the hospital, I was in an outpatient clinic for 6 months. So when I had to go to the hospital, it was like a day trip for me. Because I had to be in my room while I was recuperating, so I wasn't allowed having any activity. So when I would go to the hospital, it was like a trip for me. It was like exciting, and they had this magazine in the waiting room, and this is the one thing after five decades later I still remember were the highlights. Remember the old highlights?
Yes, I do. I remember those books. Yes.
And what I loved about it is that they had all kinds of puzzles in there, mind teasers, and they had a lot of what you're talking about with these social. Do you remember the two brothers? I forgot their names now, but one was very rude, and it was like a commentary on how, and they would always have them act opposite to people, and they would show how the one would end up having a bad day, but the one who was good always ended up having a good day. And but again, it was like social commentary. It was teaching right and wrong behavior, you know, how to be responsible and kind to people, and what would happen if you didn't and stuff. And then they would show these two brothers who were literally opposites in their personalities, you know, and then, like I said, other like logic things, and which of these, exactly what you were talking about, which of these animals go together. So it was like, do you have any common sense and stuff? But it was geared towards very, very young children. And to this day, I've actually come across them a couple other times, but to this day, I remember those magazines. They had a big impact on me. I wasn't allowed to go to school at that time because I was so sick, and this was like my schooling. I loved them. I couldn't wait to get there the next week and read the next issue, you know? So,
I remember those too, and we got them every week, and maybe it wasn't every week, but once a month or something, and we would work through them as a class. I loved them too. I love them too, and that is what I'm talking about. Now, you know, don't get me wrong, because AJ, I got to tell this story tonight, because they had career day today at his school, and he came home tonight, first of all, with a sticker on that says, be nice to me, I gave blood, and I went, what? You gave blood today? And he goes, no, Graham, they just gave me the sticker, and I was like, oh, okay. So I was like, you know, I was giggling about that, and he says, we had we had career day today. And I said, you did? And he said, yeah. And some guys came with a big army truck, and they had on camouflage stuff, and they were asking us all questions, and they asked what little girls were made of. And I said, sugar and spice and everything nice. And then one of them said, what are little boys made of? And he said, puppy dog tails. And I said, what happened? And he said, they wanted to give me a present. So they gave me these stickers for knowing those answers. And I thought to myself, you know, so the school does someone, AJ's teacher this week, they had a picnic. He's in kindergarten. They had a picnic, and you had to bring your teddy bear because it was a teddy bear's picnic. And the kids were allowed to leave the teddy bears in school Saturday or Thursday night. So when they got to school the next day, the whole classroom was a mess. The teacher went around and messed up the classroom. AJ's teddy bear was in a box of Kleenex. And he said, my teddy bear got into the box of Kleenex and threw Kleenex all over the floor and hid in the Kleenex box, Graham. And one of the other teddy bears did, which, that sounds like something I would do with the kids. I was so pleased that she did something. And he said, you should have seen that. Those teddy bears, they must have had so much fun, Grandma. And I thought, what a wonderful memory that is. So it's not like, you know, it's
That's
not
great.
There. You know
That's
what
great.
I mean? But there's still something missing. That or else, because I don't remember, Spikey, my oldest grandson, is going to be 21 in June. I don't remember any wonderful stories like that with him or any of the other kids. AJ is the first time, and Emily, who's a great-granddaughter, she's had some wonderful stories to tell me as well. So maybe things are getting back a little bit to the way it used to be, where you actually let kids grow up at a speed that was prudent for a kid to be going, you know?
Right.
But I do think there's been a lot of commentary on Facebook the last 3 or 4 months about the guns and make guns illegal or you know, make sure that everybody really has to do a background check before they're allowed to have a gun. And then I see the comments about, first, we need to pay attention to our mentally ill population. And I'm sorry, but I feel that way as well.
Right.
Because one of the
travesties with that, and again, you and I have talked about Law and Order and some of the shows like that, they depict a lot of these on the episodes on that show, which again is based on true to life situations. But a lot of mentally ill people are shoved out onto the street as soon as insurance lets out. So it's like, I'm sorry. I people say, oh, well, it's kind of socialist to talk that way. There are certain things that the government should pick up. If you have somebody who is so mentally ill that they cannot function, and incarcerate them and have the state pay for it, for God's sake. How do you allow that person to go back out on the street, possibly being a harm to themselves or others, because they don't have insurance? To me, that's ludicrous. Meanwhile, the government is spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on checking the sex life of a fly or something stupid like that. I mean, you read these all the time, you know, and, you know, they do these experiments that have zero benefit on that, just to satisfy curiosity. Redirect that money to making the population safer and getting these people the help that they really need, you know. But just like putting them out on the street because their insurance ran out, and meanwhile they're a danger to themselves or others, is beyond ludicrous.
Yeah, well, and it just makes no sense whatsoever. And of course, you and I both agree about that. We've talked about that before. But again, a lot of that is also recognizing the problem. And very sadly, so many people are so wrapped up in whatever they're doing, even parents, even school officials, a lot of people who should be paying attention and who should recognize the fact that a young person is in distress for various reasons like that, aren't paying attention because they're too wrapped up in their own stuff.
Right.
And if there were more people that, you know, were, I don't know if you could make people responsible for that. I mean, but it certainly seems like parents should know when something is going on with their child. And mm-hmm. I know of parents who have gone places and said, you know, I need help because, you know, my daughter's doing this and she's doing that. And they get little or no help unless they can justify it with, you know, with some kind of test or something like that. If your child is having so much trouble, something's wrong. You know, speaking of AJ, the night that he spoke on the radio show, that's what he said. He said, if your kid's coming home sad every night, you better find out what's wrong because something's wrong.
I know. I thought that was beautiful when he said
how
that.
How simple
that
can it get? Yes.
And you know, and if a six-year-old kid recognizes that, I'm sorry, but shame on the adults for not. How do you not realize you've got a kid whose personality has gone through a change, they're not as talkative or as active as they used to be, they seem to be very sad, and you don't ask them what's wrong,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I actually said that to somebody, and they said, well, I don't want to invade their privacy. I said, good God, what are you talking about? Are you going to wait for some tragedy to happen and then say, oh, I should have asked? What privacy is there? If your kid is in distress, find out why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that astonished me.
Well, me too. But again, a lot of times it's, you know, there are some people that overreact to everything. And then there's some people that underreact to everything.
Right.
And we need to come up with some kind of a happy medium where, mm-hmm. You know, where if something has happened a couple times and somebody says, you know, oh, don't pay any attention. I remember taking care of two little sisters when I was very young, and the one sister had a fit like I've never seen one before, and I was mortified because I already had some of my own kids. I don't think I had all four of them, but I had two or three, and I was like, oh my God, I mean, she was kicking and thumping her head on the floor and carrying on and everything, and I was like, I was almost in tears. And her little sister, who wasn't much more than five, walked up to me and said, it's okay, her will stop. And I said, what? And she said, her will stop. Her does that all the time.
Oh, geez.
And I was like, oh, my God. And I worked through it, but it was true. You know, she would have, temper tantrums like that. So, I mean, for me, I would have been worried sick about my child if my child did that. And, again, if something happens time after time after time, we get a little bit calloused about things like that. And after every time it happens, if it gets all right again, we make ourselves believe that it's okay.
Right. Right.
So, you know, to make sure that everybody realizes that I'm not saying, you know, that it makes you a bad parent because your kid is struggling and you're not paying attention. I get the fact that a lot of times we don't know what to do, and a lot of times there's nobody to ask. But I do think that if something becomes repetitious like that, you do have to either research. Today is a lot different than it was 30 years ago. You can look up anything online. In some cases, you could be your own damn doctor if you wanted to be. You can look up just about anything online and get bona fide answers to your questions. So
mm-hmm.
I do think that in order to get a handle on the learning disabilities, the depression, a lot of times a child is suffering because they have some physical differences, and a lot of times they're suffering because there's no stability with the adults in their lives. And
right.
That doesn't mean, you know, somebody has to be a Gestapo and run around and start taking away kids from their parents. I don't mean that. I just mean, like I said before, just having children doesn't mean you are an automatic parent. God knows, I made so many mistakes it isn't even funny. And it's about that sometimes. It's about making the mistakes and finding your way through and figuring out what worked and what didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also about caring. It's when you stop caring and don't make any effort, whether it's right or wrong, is when we really have a problem.
Right, and just because you make mistakes, and again, we're all human, all right, it doesn't make you a bad parent. It makes you human, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But if you realize that you've been handling something not, you know, not the best way you could, so just, you know, if there's no time like the present to try something different. If you just keep going along the way you always have been, if you don't alter your behavior in any way, the situation's not going to change. It can't change. What would motivate things to improve? So if you want your relationship with your kids to change, if you're seeing something in your child that's not making sense to you, try something different. And you can even say to them, say, look, I don't know what's going on with you, and, you know, I'm kind of lost myself in how to approach you about it, but I want you to know I love you, and if you need to talk, I'm here. You know, please let me know how I can help you. Sometimes just you showing a little vulnerability and concern is all the child needs to hear. They don't need you to be perfect. They just need to know you have their back and that you truly are concerned about them. And sometimes one little sentence like that can change that child's life.
Well, you know, I want to say this because, first of all, I'm very proud of you making that statement, knowing you don't have children. That's a very, very good explanation for making mistakes is when you don't pay any attention. And so many people are afraid to say to their child, what is going on with you? Because I'm lost. I don't know what's wrong. You have to let me help you because I love you. Those things are important to say. And you're still not always going to get the right answers, because a lot of times they don't have a clue what's wrong with them either. But at least now you've opened up the lines of communication. And that is imperative to any relationship. We've talked about this a million times on this show. I've talked about this a million times to people that I've counseled, to people I've listened to. If you don't talk, nothing ever changes. If you don't discuss things, nothing ever gets any different. It just gets worse. So talking and saying to anybody, even if you're not talking about your kids, say you're talking about your spouse. If you don't ever say anything, and I know this for a fact, a lot of times if it doesn't pertain to them, your spouse doesn't know anything's wrong.
Right.
So it is very often about saying, hey, you know, I'm not okay with this and I'm not okay with that, and we need to talk about this. And it's the same with a kid. You look at a kid and you say, look, I've been watching you. Something's going on. I don't know what it is. Can you put into words what's going on with you? And sometimes they'll say, I mean, I've had them say to me, nothing. Everything's all right with me. And I say,
right.
I say, that's hard for me to believe. So maybe you should think about this and make sure there isn't something you want to talk to me about. It doesn't have to be a big deal. It can be a little thing. A lot of times little things are the most annoying things that we go through, the little things.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. Just opening up and saying, I'm here, I'll talk, I'll listen, whatever it is you need me to do, because I that's how much I care. And sometimes just that fixes a whole bunch of stuff. Because
it makes them feel not isolated, and that's what causes such severe trauma to kids, especially the ones that commit suicide. It's because they feel so isolated. They don't feel connected to anything. They don't feel that there's a solution. They don't feel that things can get better. And sometimes just that one word can literally put them in a place, even if they don't show it to you. The fact that you've put that out there and they know that if push comes to shove, they can come to you, can sometimes mean the difference between them, you know, doing an act that can't be undone, or just kind of like trying to solve things on their own. Even if they don't come to you, it puts them in a different mind to make them safer.
That's right. And a lot of times that coincides with some of the things we talked about last night, like organizing a safe place, you know, like the woman who did that with her girlfriends and her girlfriend's kids, and
mm-hmm.
and the kids that belong to church groups, and the kids that no matter what's going on in the place where they have to be, where they have no choice, the public school that they're in, that's the only one they can go to because it's just the way the cookie crumbles, and they have to tolerate any number of things that make them uncomfortable. Maybe it's not horrible, but they're not real happy there. If they know at the end of the day or at the end of the week they have a place to go that makes them feel safe and comfortable and protected and loved, then they make it through anything. That's true of all of us.
Exactly. You know, so that's why, we had discussed this on one of the other shows, but again, you know, it doesn't take, I know, you and I were discussing the fact that a lot of times parents or people in authority figures, they won't say something because they think they have to be brilliant or they have to say that one thing that's going to be so profound. And, you know, these kids aren't looking for something profound. They're just looking for something to make them feel a little bit better.
Yeah.
And when you let them know you care about them and that what's happening to them matters to you, but that, you know, you're not a genius and you don't know what to do for them, but maybe just kind of like venting and talking about it might make them feel better. Sometimes that's profound to them.
Mm-hmm.
Just knowing mm-hmm. that somebody feels that way, you know. So, and sometimes that works the best. Just say, you know, I don't know what to say to you. I don't know what words to say, but hey, I love you. I care about you. You know, let's work through this together. You know,
mm-hmm.
and that sentence in itself, in its simplicity, can be profound.
Well, and the other thing that's very simple, it isn't always easy, but it's simple, and that is dependability. If you make
mm-hmm.
a promise to a child, you have to keep
right.
it.
Exactly.
And if there's one thing that a kid pays any closer attention to, I don't know what it is other than you keeping your word.
Right.
You tell the kid, yes, we're going to do this, and then you don't do it, and then you say it again. Well, we can't do it today, so we'll do it next Tuesday, and next Tuesday rolls around, and you don't do it again. Kids don't forget that, believe me.
Right.
That's one of the most harmful things you can do to a child. And I realize that life often gets in the way, but if it does happen and you can't keep your promise to a child, you have to make sure that that child understands that there's a good reason, a proper reason, a valid reason for you not to be able to do it, and then you better do it the next time you say you're going to, because not being able to depend on the people that are in charge of your life is
mm-hmm.
pretty awful.
Okay. I mean, that's just normal responsibility, whether it's a promise you made to your child or to anybody. If you end up not coming through for it, just simply taking responsibility and saying, and even if it's not your fault, just saying, look, I'm really sorry. I know I promised to do this for you. This came up. I couldn't get out of it, but you know what? I'll make it up to you. But like you said, you know, make a new commitment. Let them know it's still important to do this for them, and then make sure you can do it the next time, you know. But
mm-hmm.
but you're right. If you just constantly say, oh, let's do this, and and then nothing ever comes of it, that child feels less and less and less important to you, and then it affects their self-esteem and their sense of importance to themselves. And I think a lot of parents don't understand that sometimes, that breaking promises has a really, really harmful effect on a child's sense of importance.
Well, like you just said, I think it has a profound effect on all of us. I don't, of course, I'm one who makes excuses for people that I care about. I know that about myself. And if somebody continually disappoints me, I usually don't do anything about it except for realize that that's just who they are and they're just not
uh-huh.
together enough to be able to, you know, follow through when they say they're going to do something. So
uh-huh.
most often I just forgive them. I just don't count on them for anything again. But it's different when you're talking about mommy and daddy. Because there's not a whole lot of other choices out there.
Right, right.
You know.
So that's more, when your parents, when you have the impression that you're not important to your parents, that's more impactful on your impression of yourself than any other relationship you're going to have. Because if your own parents that birthed you don't, or if you think you're not important to them, and it's usually not the case, but a lot of times
right.
that's where kids go. If they think they're not important to their parents, it affects their whole impression of how the world as a whole sees them. Oh, my own parents don't love me. My own parents don't care about what happens to me. That affects them on a developmental level, and it affects their relationship with everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually more impactful than if they felt that they weren't important to somebody else.
Right. Well, I've had a kid say to me, you know, if I can't get my own parents to care about me, how am I supposed to find somebody, you know, to fall in love with and marry? And I'm like,
exactly.
Why are you jumping that far ahead, first of all? And second of all, that's not true. And it's your perception. It's not the truth, you know, in most cases. But
mm-hmm.
I can understand how they got there. I can understand why they think that, you know. If your own mom or your own dad doesn't seem to have time for you, then you grow up believing that, you know, if they didn't, they were the most important people you're ever going to have in your life. And if they didn't care, then who the hell is going to care?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And they pick up on that kind of stuff, I mean, incredibly fast, and are so acutely aware of what's going on around them and people's comfort and discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
Kids are just very, very bright, and because they haven't lost sight of their own intuition, they still work with that in a lot of cases. They're much more perceptive than most of the adults I know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I'm getting all kinds of calls from New Jersey tonight on my cell phone. I have no idea why. But
yeah, that little number you have playing up there. I've heard
yeah,
a couple.
I know. Usually I have the phone turned off. I thought I turned it off tonight and put it on charge, but apparently I didn't. But so I wanted to mention tonight too that Shelley and I are still working on this event. And we will be interested in hearing from people who would like to participate in this event. We have we were tentatively going to talk to a very close friend who has a beautiful farm, but we've decided that it is not really large enough venue and not enough suitable parking, etc. So
right.
we're going to do some research this week and hopefully find a place that will be a lot more suitable. And
mm-hmm.
when we do, we will want vendors, so to speak, people who would like to come, who are like-minded, who are concerned about the way our world is going, and if they can offer anything that will be specifically for the betterment of mankind, we would like to hear from them, whether it's food or, you know, something that you believe in, whether you're a teacher, whether you have the ability to help people get to a better place in their life, anything like that. And fun stuff, if you make beautiful jewelry, if you, you know, we'd like to have it a lovely festival that is all about the golden rule, which is doing unto others as you would have them do unto you. And we'd like to
remember,
make it about that.
It has to go further than that, though. That's the point Izzy was making. That's where everybody stops. The full golden rule is do unto others as you would have them do unto you, and don't do unto others as you would not want done unto you. That's the full golden rule, and that's the second half is what a lot of people don't ever consider.
Well, that's because if you can get the first one down pat, the second one doesn't matter.
Right.
If you can get
right.
the first one down pat, you've won it. And but I, you know, that's fine. And we could carry it as far as we want to, as long as it stays positive and in keeping with taking care of each other instead of not caring about each other, and
exactly.
making friends instead of enemies, and making people feel welcome and
mm-hmm.
loved and cared about. And I think there's a lot of people out there today who want to feel that way and who do feel that way about their own circle of friends. And we need to enlarge that. We need to let that spread. We need to fan the fire of friendship. And when we do that, then things will get better, because it can't help but get better. But
of course,
we don't do that, then we're going down that road of discord and anger, and you don't like me, so I don't like you. You have a strange way of doing things, and I'm not going to tolerate it anymore. I mean, you can hear the statements people make every day. Like I said the other day on Facebook, I was so ashamed of some people that I love very much by some of the things they were saying on Facebook.
Wow.
You know, I just thought to myself, but I can't get into it, and I won't get into it on Facebook. But I think to myself, I don't understand why you find it necessary to, first of all, make fun. It really bugs me that people make fun of the President of the United States. I think I've made that very clear. You don't
mm-hmm.
have to, he doesn't have to be the man you chose. He doesn't have to be who you thought should be president, but he is president now. So where is your respect? He's in a seat you will probably never sit in.
That's true.
So he got there somehow. He got there somehow. He wasn't, he wasn't ejected from heaven and sat behind that desk in the Oval Office. He worked to get there. And I realize that some people have all kinds of rumor and innuendo and bad comments to make about that, and they're entitled to that. That's what the United States of America means. You can think freely and speak freely, but it doesn't say anything about being disrespectful. Does it say that anywhere?
Right.
And that's what you're doing when you talk like that. You're just being disrespectful. You're not making any points. You're not doing anything but, like that girlfriend of mine when I was a little girl and I didn't know what her mother meant until I was much older. Two wrongs don't make a right. And I must
mm-hmm.
have run that saying through my head a million times, trying to figure out what she meant by that. And when I finally realized what she meant, of course, I agreed.
Well, it's very easy to criticize people when you don't even have a solution yourself, But if you don't have a solution, if you can't think of doing something better, then you really don't have any right to criticize the person who's doing at least something, It's different if you said, we should really do it this way and then try to rally people and to get supporters and make a positive change. But just to sit there and bitch, whine, and complain, it doesn't improve anything. It just makes everybody sour on a subject. Come up with a solution and then put that out there.
Well, and like we've talked about so many times before, is it helping the person that's spewing it? Not in any way, shape, or form.
Exactly.
There's no way it can. When you spew that kind of negativity, believe me, you are the most miserable person in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You're making yourself more miserable than anybody else in the room because you're spewing it. So
exactly.
So at any rate, let's open those doors. If anybody has any suggestions, I hope everybody realizes we're in West Palm Beach, Florida. We have lots of beautiful places, but we don't have a lot of moolah. So it would have to be something where we could do what we need to do without it costing a whole lot of money, because I don't want anybody to have to spend a lot of money on this. This is going to be something that's beautiful and pulls us all together. So let's work on it. And if anybody has any ideas, please call me and let me know about it. So, Ms. Shelley, thank you for joining me tonight. And we will talk in the morning, right?
Excellent. Yes, we will.
Okay. All right. So, everybody, thank you so much for joining us tonight. And I will keep you posted on the young man if anything changes with all of that that's going on. And I promise on Monday night I'll have some positive stuff instead of sad stuff to share with everybody. Thank you so much. Good night and God bless. Good night, Shelley.
Good night, Renee. Good night, everyone.